Well, a few months ago, if you predicted a Labor victory in the New Zealand election, I'd want to know what you were smoking. The New Zealand centre-right party of National, they'd been in power for 9 years. Everything that should be up, economic growth, stocks, confidence, was up, while everything that should be down, unemployment, interest rates, debt, was down. To paraphrase Ronald Reagan, it was morning again in New Zealand. Meanwhile, the opposition Labor Party was leaderless and, frankly, out of its depth. All seasoned observers of New Zealand politics thought that New Zealand Labor could not possibly win the election. But such is the magic of politics that 3 months later, and 26 days since the election, it's Labor that's in power. Here's what the kingmaker Winston Peters just announced.
We had a choice to make, whether it was either with National or Labor, for a modified status quo or for change. In our negotiations, both National and Labor were presented with that opportunity. Working together, cooperating together for New Zealand. That's why in the end we chose a coalition government of New Zealand First with the New Zealand Labor Party. Thank you very much.
As Winston Peters announcing a coalition with the Labor Party to form a new government. The politics of disruption across the Western world continues unabated. Well, to chat more about this political earthquake across the Tasman, let's turn to our panel. Luke Malpass is an editorial writer at the Australian Financial Review, a Kiwi himself. He covers, among other things, New Zealand politics and economics for the Fin. Carl Dufresne, no stranger to this program, is a columnist and former editor of The Dominion in Wellington. Luke, Carl, welcome to Between the Lines.
G'day, Tom. Tom, good to be with you.
Well, Carl, Winston Peters, the charismatic New Zealand First populist, he's announced that he'll support Labor and as a result kick out the Conservatives. Why?
Well, the first point I would make there, Tom, is that to listen to Winston Peters just a moment ago, and in fact to listen to him at any point over the last few weeks, an outsider could get the impression here was a man who had been given a sweeping mandate by the voters of New Zealand to impose a kind of new agenda on New Zealand. This is a guy whose party won 7.7% of the vote. This is a guy who couldn't even retain his own electorate seat. So you have to question the legitimacy of this outcome. But to answer your question more specifically, how did Peters and Labor manage to kick out what, as you quite rightly said, was a very successful national government? I think the short answer is that they managed to, well, to be fair, the New Zealand First broad policy agenda probably aligned more closely with Labor's to start with. It's more interventionist. They think along the same lines on some key issues, like immigration is one, foreign investment probably is another. But I think what it came down to in the end is that Peters managed to screw a better deal out of Labor. And I think I'd go on to say that Labor was simply more desperate in the end to become a government and was prepared to make more concessions than National. There was some suggestion that late in the negotiations, and Peters is a wily old fox, he kept the negotiations going right to the end, had both parties on tenterhooks. They didn't know which way he was going to go until he called this press conference. And I think he was just pushing things to the limit, and in the end, there's some suggestion that National started to push back against some of his expectations. So that may, I mean, this is all still kind of a bit unclear. It's all been very, very opaque. We only found out less than an hour ago what the outcome was. And so as time passes and more information emerges, we'll doubtless know more. But that's my initial assessment of the situation.
Now, Luke, you have written, and I think this is the conventional wisdom, Winston Peters is seen as the kind of Pauline Hanson, an old-style economic nationalist, used to be with the National Party, the centre-right party, and yet he's got in bed with the Labor Party. How do you account for that?
Well, you've got to remember he supported Helen Clark's government from 2005 to 2008 as well. And on that occasion, he announced his party knew that he was going to back Labor, but then they found out during the announcement he was also going to be foreign minister. So I very much agree with Carl. He's a guy who goes with whoever gives him the better deal. In this case, the two things he highlighted were cuts to immigration, and Labor has one of their big policies is a big government house building program, which he also nominated. But it is very unclear the exact form of the government and how many ministers New Zealand First will have, I think will tell us a lot. And I should add as well, I mean, it looks like it could be a fundamentally unstable government, I think is an important thing to think about at this point.
Well, this is quite extraordinary when you think about it. The New Zealand National Party won something like 10% more votes than Labor, yet it's Labor, Carl, that will run the government in Wellington. Explain how that works.
Well, you know, to explain how that works, I would have to defend our MMP electoral system, and I'm not about to do that. This is a quirk of a deeply flawed electoral system, and I think I might have said on this program before that we rejected one deeply flawed electoral system back in the 1990s, namely the first-past-the-post system, in favour of another deeply flawed system. And now,
so you basically went from a British system to the German system.
That's exactly right. And we're now seeing the flaws in the MMP system laid very bare.
Is it unprecedented, Carl, that a party that won 10% more of the votes loses the election?
To my knowledge, it is, but then there are a lot of weird things going on here at the moment and have been going on for the last few weeks. I mean, the moment Peters enters the sort of the equation, that's a kind of guarantee that you're in for a bit of weirdness. I agree with Luke, incidentally, that I think this is going to be an unstable government. I think you're going to have some very, very discontented Greens. I mean, the Greens did almost as well as New Zealand First in the election. They had a deal with the Labor Party going into the election. They would have had high expectations about finally getting their feet under the cabinet table, and it now seems that to mix a metaphor, they're going to have the rug whipped out from underneath them. Now, the Greens are having a party conference later this evening to determine their stand on this. At the moment, it looks like they're going to be sitting outside cabinet. They're going to have a confidence and supply agreement with the Labor-led government, and I just suspect that a lot of the Green candidates are going to be very, very unsatisfied with that. But again, it remains to be seen how that will play out.
Back on the 10% point, I mean, Hillary Clinton won something like 3% more votes than Donald Trump. Tony Abbott won more votes than Julia Gillard in 2010. Kim Beazley won more votes than John Howard in 1998. And they still managed to lose, but 10% votes, that is just striking. Luke, do you think there will be a backlash against Winston Peters for seemingly betraying the people on this issue?
Oh, I think there will be from probably half of his supporters, because I think he draws some of the more socially conservative, traditional sort of Labor right people, I guess we'd say in Australia.
That's intriguing. So he's got a lot of socially conservative voters, and he's now in bed with the Greens. How does that work?
Well, I think I don't think it'll work out very well. I think everyone will be unsatisfied in the morning. To be honest, I think the situation with the Greens could potentially be disastrous because a lot of New Zealand First policies are really zero-sum with the Greens. They are fundamentally opposed on things. And we don't know the details yet, but it looks like there's a coalition between New Zealand First and Labor, and then the Greens. Then the Greens are kind of Labor's taking care of them sort of thing, out of their share, if you like. So it sort of looks like the Greens will just give confidence and supply in some sense. But it will be very difficult to see how the whole thing can hold together, and I very much agree with Carl.
If you just tuned in, you're on Between the Lines with me, Tom Switzer. We're talking about the political earthquake in New Zealand with Carl Dufresne in New Zealand and Luke Malpass at the Financial Review in Sydney. Let's turn to the new Prime Minister, Jacinta Ardern. She's only 37 years of age. Carl, you've argued her bloodless coup, if you like, or her trip to the Labor leadership 2 months ago. It had a galvanising impact that few could have anticipated. How do you explain her success?
Look, I can't. I mean, how do you explain politics?
Well, especially in this day and age with Trump and Macron. It's just a fascinating story, but go on.
There's no doubt that Labor, under the previous leadership, was looking tired, it was looking stale, it was looking rather dour and uninteresting. And, I mean, Jacinda Ardern was just an example of how an attractive personality, a fairly charismatic personality, can just kind of change the personality of an entire party. And she did that, and she did galvanize the party. She energized Labor, and suddenly from being no hopers, basically, they were in with a chance, and they did end up getting 37% of the vote, which no one could have anticipated. Still, as you say, 10 percentage points behind National. She's, incidentally, I think, possibly the youngest New Zealand Prime Minister ever.
Right, yeah.
And she'd be the youngest Australian Prime Minister too, I suspect. Luke, what about the economic implications of all this? We've got Labor, which is a centre-left party, with New Zealand First, which is essentially economic nationalist. I mean, can we expect a flight of capital, even a bursting of the property market?
A flight of capital, no. You know, not in the short term. Markets wait to see what happens. Longer term, I think the policy implications will be more difficult because the Labor Party very much, I mean, they downplayed a lot of this stuff, but they want to re-regulate the labour market and make it more like an Australia centralised awards system. They want more government intervention in the kind of welfare transfers area. They're not very keen on free trade. If they're not allowed to ban foreigners from buying houses in New Zealand, and they might walk away from the TPP, which is very important for New Zealand.
This is the Trans-Pacific Partnership that Trump pulled out of. Go on.
Right, but it's still important for New Zealand because New Zealand doesn't have the same sort of favourable access to Japanese markets that Australia has. So that will be a very, very important thing for New Zealand exporters, who Peters today said were very important. In fact, he said that you know, quote, we'll start to return to an economy that realises that we live or die by exports.
Yes, well, on that note, Carl, Peters is known for being anti-immigration, anti-free trade, anti-foreign investment. Surely that'll rattle the markets.
I'm sure it will, and I haven't had a chance to see what the dollar is doing, but you know, I think one likely consequence is that the dollar is going to drop, which Peters would be quite happy with. I mean, what you've got here with Peters is a mixture of social conservatism, which, as I think Luke pointed out, is going to sit very uneasily with the Greens, who are at the absolute opposite end of the spectrum, and old-fashioned interventionism, which is one of the reasons he's kind of simpatico, in a sense, with the Labor Party. They have that in common. But I think this is going to be an inherently unstable government. And I think there's an argument here that I've been advancing to anyone who is prepared to listen, that the best thing the National Party could do, actually, was sit out the next 3 years, wait for this government to self-destruct, as it were, and romp back into power at the next election in 2020.
Finally, gentlemen, let's talk about the relationship with Canberra. Julie Bishop made some pretty controversial remarks about the New Zealand Labor Party. They said that they were in cahoots with the Australian Labor Party to help bring about the downfall of, or the embarrassment at least, of possible downfall of the Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce. Luke, how does this play out in relations between Canberra and Wellington?
Oh, look, I don't think it'll really make any difference. But when I spoke to Jacinda Ardern, you know, she said it's just a blip on the radar. Everyone's grown up and understands that. Particularly for New Zealand, the most important relationship is with Australia. So. You wouldn't expect she would do anything to jeopardise that.
And Carl?
No, I agree with that assessment. I think that that little dust-up over Barnaby Joyce and the citizenship issue was just a little bit of political posturing, didn't really mean a hell of a lot in the longer term, and I don't think it's going to make much difference to the long-term relationship between this government and the Australian government.
Still, it was enough to make New Zealand politics a front-page story, which is rare in Australia. Luke, Carl, great to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Tom.
Terrific. Thanks, Tom.
Carl Dufresne is a columnist and a former editor of The Dominion in Wellington. And Luke Malpass is an editorial writer at The Financial Review. He covers New Zealand politics for The Fin.